Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim, in the name of Allah, most gracious, most merciful. Clear your doubts about Islam, 50 answers to common questions compiled by Sahih International. Question 35. Why is so much of the Muslim world underdeveloped? No one can deny that the Muslim world has been in decline for several centuries, the causes of which go back into history. In the Muslim nation's early stages, wealth, centers of learning, and public works were abundant. But affluence, excessive concern with worldly life, and the spread of corruption eventually weakened religious consciousness. The inevitable result of these human failures was an ebb in conversions to Islam. The inevitable result of these human failures was the inevitable result of these human failures was an ebb in conversions to Islam and territorial expansion, losses sustained in East Asia and Europe, the ascension of Western power and influence, and a change from an ascendant to a defensive posture. The present backwardness of most Muslim societies, their political degradation, and their people suffering in spite of their human and material resources and of Islam's noble values and principles is the unfortunate reality of the present day. The calamities that befell the Muslim world after the period of its early expansion, eventually leading to the fall of the caliphate, cannot be attributed to Islamic thought or even entirely to errors in political leadership. The prophetic period and that of the early caliphs which followed presented the best example for all succeeding generation. However, the rapid influx of new peoples and nations into the community of Islam before they were properly educated as to Islamic objectives and values resulted in a later political leadership that never developed and matured as it should have. The Islamic vision became obscured and its spirit reduced to mere form, empty words, and a heritage venerated, but seriously misunderstood by later generations. The natural trend of the Islamic legal system to expand was arrested, and the vital physical sciences, economics, sociology, and political thought, all essential aspects of previous development, were neglected. At the same time, the Muslim world was becoming increasingly weak and vulnerable. Europe was beginning to benefit from the achievements of Islamic scholarship and assert itself. The fact that most Muslim regions of the world were then conquered, dominated, and exploited by Western colonial powers for some time is not an excuse that is condoned by Islam. Rather, it was the natural outcome of the widespread neglect and failure by Muslims to conscientiously and comprehensively adhere to the teachings of their religion. The importance of obtaining knowledge and working conscientiously with determination was made clear by the Prophet of Islam. Muslims are taught that because man has been given a certain amount of free will, it must be exercised properly in accordance with Islamic teachings to earn approval of the Creator. This in itself is motivation for Muslims to be the most knowledgeable and productive people possible. If Muslim societies today are not meeting their potential, it is surely not due to Islam, rather it is from their ignorance of the religion and failure to apply and practice it. 36. Question number 36. If Islam is such a good religion, why do we find many Muslims dishonest, unreliable, and lazy? Islam came as a message of guidance from God to all creation at a time when ignorance and corruption were universal. It opened people's minds and souls to learning, development, refinement, and morality. The achievements of Islamic thought in that early period were sufficient to bring light, guidance, and knowledge to humanity. However, as among every other people, there are indeed some Muslims who are heedless, undependable, corrupt, and selfish, and the media projects this stereotype about Muslims in particular. It can be readily noted that whenever an adherent to any other faith commits a crime, the media seldom brings up the issue of religion, but when a Muslim is involved, it is Islam that is blamed and portrayed in a negative light before public opinion. The fact cannot be denied that many Muslims today are unmindful of the teachings of their religion due either to a lack of religious knowledge or to various worldly inducements and attractions. But even if one recognizes that some Muslims may be dishonest, immoral, or impulsive, He should not judge Islam by its non-conforming or disobedient members, but rather by those who conscientiously adhere to its teachings. Since Islam categorically forbids such evils as lying, cheating, and negligence, the wrongdoer must be blamed for his crimes rather than the religion. One should instead examine the system itself and understand its principles and disregard the acts of those who have serious deficiencies in their knowledge, beliefs, and practice. While today's Muslim societies are not model ones by any means, they still enjoy a comparatively stable family life, absence of delinquency, low crime rates, greater freedom from drugs and alcoholism, as well as the warmth of brotherhood, generosity, and mutual aid. It may be observed that taken as a whole, the Muslim community produces the best citizens in any society. As a matter of religious observance, the majority avoids the consumption of alcohol and drugs, eliminating many intoxicant-related crimes. Collectively, Muslims are the community which gives the maximum amount of charity in the world. And no community can equal Muslims where modesty, sobriety, and human ethics are concerned. Islam may be fairly and justly assessed not by negative stereotypes portrayed by the media, but by what its authentic sources contain and by the practice of the most excellent follower of the religion, Prophet Muhammad. There have been a number of unbiased non-Muslim historians who have declared that Muhammad was an exemplary human being. It is his pattern of life that demonstrates the true Islamic ideal, an example to be followed by Muslims. Question 37. What is Islam's view about education, science, and technology? The framework of Islamic thought represents a comprehensive view of life and the universe. A Muslim is therefore required to acquire both religious and worldly knowledge. In fact, Islam advocated knowledge at a time when the whole world was engulfed in ignorance. In a matter of years, the early generation of Muslims became a learned and refined people, for Islam had awakened in them the faculty of intellect. Those early Muslims understood from the teachings of their religion that useful knowledge is necessary for the benefit of the self and of humanity. Hence, they pursued it to such a degree that they surpassed other nations in development and productivity and carried the torch of civilization for many centuries. Muslim history abounds with examples of scientific and cultural ingenuity. Muslims inherited the knowledge of the nations that came before them, developed it, and placed it in the context of a precise moral framework. Muslim scholarship made a vital contribution to the enrichment and advancement of human civilization. While Europe was still in the Dark Ages, religious Muslims were making great advances in the fields of medicine, mathematics, physics, astronomy, geography, architecture, literature, and history, documentation to mention but a few. Many important new procedures were transmitted to medieval Europe from Muslim regions, such as Arabic numerals, with the principle of the zero vital to the advancement of mathematics and the use of algebra. Sophisticated instruments, including the astrolabe and the quadrant, as well as good navigational maps, were first developed by Muslim. Only after people lost sight of their religious beliefs and obligations did the scientific achievements of the Muslim world cease and fall into obscurity. Similarly, Islam does not now oppose any modern inventions that are beneficial to mankind. It is sufficient that they be used in the name of God and for His cause. In reality, machines, instruments, and devices have no religion or homeland. They can be used for either good or bad objectives, and the way they are used can affect much of the Earth's population. Even something so simple as a glass can be filled either with a nourishing drink or with a poison. Television can provide education or immorality. It is up to the user to decide, and a Muslim is commanded to make good use of all the means at his disposal while being prohibited from causing harm to himself or herself or others. Failure to use the proper means toward benefit is in effect a deprecation of Islamic teachings. A truly Islamic government is required to the best of its ability to provide all means that promote adequate education for its citizens. Education is a right for all individuals and the required moral duty of every capable Muslim. All able, intelligent, and skilled individuals in an Islamic society are required to educate themselves not only in the basics of their religion but in necessary worldly affairs. Further, it is obligatory upon qualified people to study every beneficial field of knowledge. For example, since every society needs doctors, it becomes obligatory for some people to go into the field of medicine to fulfill the needs of society. Advancements in science and technology are among the ways and means to achieve development of the Muslim world. Islam calls upon Muslims to pursue knowledge in the broadest sense of the world. Prophet Muhammad said, seeking knowledge is an obligation upon every Muslim. He also said, for one who treads the path to knowledge, Allah will make easy the path to paradise. And the Quran contains numerous references to knowledge and its importance, such as, indeed, in the creation of the heavens and the earth and the alternation of night and day are signs for those of understanding. Say, are those who know equal to those who do not know? Allah will raise those who have believed among you and those who were given knowledge by degrees. Quranic verses encourage study and contemplation of the universe that surrounds us and is particularly concerned with these sciences that give human beings the ability to benefit from the world around them. While encouraging investigation, the Quran contains references to a variety of subjects which have been shown to be scientifically accurate. This is a fulfillment of God's statement over 14 centuries ago. We will show them our signs in the horizons and within themselves until it becomes clear to them that it is the truth. Thus, when a Muslim has a sincere and wholesome intention to obtain knowledge, it will also have a positive effect on his faith. For knowledge reinforces textual evidence for the existence of the Almighty Creator and assists in appreciation of the many scientific allusions found in the Quran. There has never been an established scientific fact that contradicted the teachings of Islam. Whatever modern science discovers only increases a Muslim's knowledge of God's magnificent creation. Thus, Islam actively encourages scientific endeavors and the study of God's signs in nature. It also welcomes beneficial technological advances and allows people to enjoy the fruits of a human ingenuity. To a Muslim, conflict between science and religion is an impossibility, for religion comes from God and so does his system of creation and development. The modern, purely materialistic approach to scientific and technological advancement has indeed granted man a measure of physical comfort, but not a mental or spiritual comfort. Islam advocates the incorporation of knowledge within a just and balanced value system where anything beneficial for one's spiritual and worldly improvement is encouraged and advocated. Question 38. Does Islam accept slavery? Sometimes people ask why Islam did not abolish slavery. They tend to forget that other religions did not do so either. In fact, there are several passages in the Bible that order slaves to serve their masters well. It is well known that when Europe made contact with Africa, the black people of that continent were faced with a major calamity of a human misery that lasted more than five centuries. Slavery was not abolished worldwide until the year 1953 through a resolution issued by the United Nations. At the time of the Quran's revelation, slavery was a universal institution upon which the economies of every civilization were dependent. There were many ways by which a slave could be obtained, such as poverty, forcing one to sell himself or herself or his children into slavery, debt, when a debtor could not pay off his debt, he became a slave, kidnapping and raids. Islam limited the sources that existed previously to one, the capture of enemy prisoners during war, and all others were prohibited. Actually, Islam is unique in its concern for the peaceful elimination of this practice. Due to His perfect knowledge and wisdom, God did not order slavery abolished outright. Since the economy of every civilization on earth was based and dependent upon this system, not only would the Muslim community have been put at a great disadvantage by the immediate emancipation of all slaves, but the slaves themselves would have been unprepared for release into society without homes or means of support. Mercifully, God made the freeing of slaves within Islam a gradual transition. Manumission by the state and by individual Muslims was encouraged as a righteous deed, greatly rewarded in the hereafter. Manumission meaning freeing a slave. The Quran stated that obligatory zakah and charity funds could be used for the purpose of slaves to be freed, and freeing a slave is cited therein as expiation for breaking an oath and for the commission of particular kinds of sins and errors. Moreover, a slave could enter into a contract with his master to earn his freedom. Thousands of slaves requested and were granted contracts of emancipation by their Muslim owners. Prophet Muhammad repeatedly emphasized good treatment of the slaves who remained, severely rebuking those owners who transgressed. Under Islam, slaves were to be given the same quality of food and clothing as their master. They were not to be overworked. Their dignity was to be preserved, and they were to be treated with justice and kindness. Often, slaves became members of Muslim families and refused freedom. Only under Islam did the slave enjoy a unique position as a member of the household and community worthy of respect. In many cases, a slave would become a close friend and advisor of his master, or the master would even regard him as a son. It was not uncommon for slaves to be given precedence over free men regarding religious or worldly matters in which one of them excelled. For example, a slave well versed in the Quran could lead the prayer. The Muslims were ordained or were ordered to obey if a slave should be appointed in charge of their affairs. Islam has always encouraged the emancipation of slaves with the objection of gradually diminishing their numbers and with the objection of gradually or the objective of gradually diminishing their numbers and integrating them into society. As a result of Islamic teaching, slavery was almost completely eradicated from many areas of the Muslim world, peacefully and without bloodshed. Can any other religion or civilization make such a claim? Question 39. Is there any mention of a human rights in Islam? Islam has laid down universal and fundamental rights for humanity as a whole, which are to be observed and respected under all circumstances. These basic rights are associated with Islamic faith and belief because they are divinely ordained. Thus, human rights in Islam are religious obligations, meaning that it is obligatory for every Muslim to protect them and restore them if they are violated. Islam declares all people equal in terms of human values, and all individuals are equal before the Islamic code of law. Its judgments and legal penalties are applicable to all races and classes of people without any distinction, and without any person, group, or nation acquiring immunity or privilege. Every human being is entitled to his integrity, honor, and reputation. Every human being is entitled to his integrity, honor, and reputation during his life and after his death. Islam condemns the abuse of power, position, and authority, and commands people to assist an oppressed person even with the use of force when necessary. Every individual in an Islamic society, regardless of his faith or religious affiliation, position, or social status, has certain immutable rights, which include the right to be consulted on issues that concern their economic and social affairs, the right to be consulted on issues that concern their economic and social affairs, the right to be considered innocent unless proven guilty, the right to seek judgment against oppressors, and to have an equal hearing before the judge. It is an unfortunate reality of our time, however, that the governments of many so-called Muslim countries do not apply these principles, but rather suppress public opinion and violate human rights. However, such tyranny is in no way representative of Islamic teachings. In fact, the Prophet of Islam warned the most ruthless in punishing people in this world will be the most ruthlessly punished of people by God on the day of resurrection. The most ruthless in punishing people in this world will be the most ruthlessly punished of people by God on the day of resurrection. And the Quran clearly commands, "O you who have believed, stand up firmly for God and witness with justice, and do not let hatred of a people prevent you from being just. Be just, that is nearer to righteousness. No one may be arrested, exiled. No one may be arrested, exiled, punished, or his freedom restricted without adequate legal action. No one may be subjected to physical or psychological torment, medical experimentation, or any other humiliating treatment. And it is not permitted to empower executive authority to issue exceptional laws. These human rights are comprehensive and applicable to every person under Islamic jurisdiction, regardless of his race, religion, nationality, or social status. They cannot be altered at any time or under any circumstances. Violation of these rights is a violation against the divine decree and necessitates punishment in the hereafter in addition to that of this world, unless the offender repents and reforms. If such human rights had never been enforced at some time in human history, they would have remained no more than theoretical ideals in people's minds. But Prophet Muhammad founded a civilization in which they were fully implemented, serving as an outstanding example for all future generations of mankind. A Muslim believer is obligated to oppose injustice and oppression, no matter who the victim happens to be. When seeing another human being in distress or critical need of assistance, it is his duty to help that person Otherwise, he is accountable for whatever increase in suffering was caused by his neglect. Even during war, it is not permissible to harm women, children, the elderly, the sick, or the wounded. The hungry person must be fed, the naked clothed, and the wounded or diseased treated medically, irrespective of who they are. Under Islam, the lives and properties of all citizens are inviolable, whether they are Muslims or not. The right of security and protection to a person and his family is the most basic of all rights. It is unlawful in a Muslim society for any of its citizens to be harassed or threatened by words, acts, or weapons of any type. For the protection of a human life, in particular, Islam has required severe punishments for criminals who murder, injure, and harm others. One of the fundamental rights established by the sacred text is that no one can be compelled to accept Islam. It is the duty of Muslims to establish the proofs of Islam to people so that truth can be distinguished from falsehood. After that, whoever wishes to accept Islam may do so, and whoever wishes to continue in unbelief may do so. Question 40. Doesn't Islam oppress women? Many people think of Islam as a chauvinistic religion that demeans women, and the stereotypical image of the completely secluded and oppressed Muslim woman is all too common. They cite the condition of women in some Muslim countries to emphasize the point, but their error is that they fail to make a distinction between the practices of those people and the true teachings of the religion that they profess. Although women have been oppressed by Muslims in some cultures, this should not be understood as coming from the religion. Rather, it reflects customs that are inconsistent, if not completely contrary to Islamic teachings. And it is true that some Muslim men still oppress women, but then so do many non-Muslim men. When Muslims are at fault, it is either because of cultural habit or their ignorance about Islam. In actual fact, Islam expects its adherents to uphold the rights of women, protect their social status, and prevent their degradation in any way. The status of women in earlier civilization was so low that they were denied basic human dignity. Prostitution was a regular practice, and many considered women to be basically evil, subhuman, and inferior to men. Before Islam, the Arabs disdained women, and often when a female child was born, she was buried alive. Islam uplifted women and gave them honor and equal status, and it requires that this status be upheld and maintained. Islam secured for the woman her intellectual, religious, social, economic, and political rights, including the right to an education, the right to own property and to use it at her own discretion, and the right to work. A Muslim woman is a completely independent personality. In addition to her right to think and believe as she likes, Islam considers her to be an active member of society who can make a valuable contribution. From the dawn of Islam, women engaged in many occupations such as commerce, agriculture, and manufacturing. A Muslim woman can make any contract or bequest in her own name. She is entitled to inherit in her position as mother, a wife, a sister, and a daughter. It is not permissible for anyone to take a woman's wealth without her consent. And there is consensus among the scholars of Islam that all economic activities of a woman, like buying, selling, leasing, giving gifts, and giving collateral, are legally valid, and that she has a completely independent economic existence. Women have the right to a decent life without facing aggression or being wronged. Women have the right to be educated, to express themselves, to give sincere advice, to enjoin what is good and forbid what is evil, and to invite people to Islam. None of these basic principles have changed, but regarding their application, there can be no doubt that the weaker religious commitment has grown among Muslims. The more these rights have been neglected. Modern Western societies claim to have improved the condition of women, but have actually demoted them to the level of slaves in the hands of pleasure seekers and sex marketers by convincing them that they should be freed from religious and social restrictions. The United States of America is one of the leading advocates of women's liberation, but it also has one of the highest rates of rape and sexual harassment in the world. A woman's proclaimed right to seek employment and climb the ladder of success is seldom without compromise, but much is overlooked in the quest to be equal with men. As a fundamental principle, Islam holds that women are indeed equal to men in their origin, their humanity, their honor and their accountability before God. They are also equal in their need to fulfill their physical and material needs to possess property and dispose of it as they wish. Both sexes are required to obtain knowledge. In fact, it is the religious duty of every Muslim man and woman. Women used to seek knowledge at the mosque and in the home of Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon him. They even asked him to set aside a day for teaching them, and he did so. There were many excellent scholars, jurists, and writers among women during the era of the Prophet's companions and their students, as well as later periods of Islamic history. The notion that Islam makes women second-class citizens worth half a man is no more than a myth. Over 1,400 years ago, Islam elevated the status of women by declaring them sisters of men, giving them the right of education to the highest level, the right to choose a husband, the right to end an unhappy marriage, the right to inheritance, and in general, the rights of a full citizen of the state. Under Islamic law, it is unlawful for a woman to be married off without her consent or forced into a marriage. She has the right to initiate a separation from marriage if her rights are not being granted or she cannot bear the husband. Prophet Muhammad is known to have annulled marriages of women who had been unwillingly coerced. Widows and divorcees have the right to remarry and are in fact encouraged to do so. When a Muslim woman marries, she does not give up her family name and keeps her distinct identity. In Muslim marriages, the husband is required to give a dowry to his wife, which becomes her private property and is not subject to the dictates of her male relatives. Similarly, any money she earns or receives, whether she is married or not, is her own to use in any way she sees fit. Islam places on men the obligation of protecting and maintaining all of their female relatives, and a man must provide for his wife even if she has money of her own. She is not obligated to spend anything in maintenance of her family and is thus relieved of the need to seek employment. However, she may work if she prefers to or if circumstances warrant it. The family, like any other organization, requires order and leadership. The Quran has given the husband a degree of authority over the wife, which means responsibility, guardianship, and accountability. It is in no way a license to practice tyranny within the household. Rather, it is the burden of responsibility to care completely and conscientiously for one's wife and children. In turn, obedience is due to him, but only pertaining to what is right and fair according to the Islamic Sharia. The Quran states, and due to women is what is similar to that expected from them. Not only are material and physical rights specified, but those of kindness and consideration are equally significant in Islamic law.